Hello, and welcome to Vision and Voices, a podcast where ordinary people are doing extraordinary things in your community. I'm your host, Crystal Baker Gill, and today we're talking coronavirus. As much as we love to get away from it, we can't. It's a part of what we're experiencing right now. It's a part of our everyday lives, and I think it's very important for us to discuss it, to talk about how we've had to adjust to it, how our organization, Volunteers of America Chesapeake, has had to adjust to it, and how we move forward. So today, to join me in this discussion, I've invited three leaders within our Volunteers of America Chesapeake organization to shed some light on it. Our first guest is our medical professional, Yvette Wood. Yvette comes to us today as a registered nurse with a wealth of experience. She has more than 15 years in the field of nursing. Yvette has served as a nursing home consultant specializing in geriatrics, wound care, diabetes education, oncology support, and cardiac care. She has served as the clinical education specialist for the pharmaceutical industry for 8 years, and she's consulted in 10 states. Today, Yvette Wood serves Volunteers of America Chesapeake as our Director of Clinical Services. Yvette, welcome, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
So Yvette, let's jump right in. We have a lot of information to cover, and I just want to kind of shed some light on this COVID-19 situation. And my first question to you is, what is it? What is COVID-19? What is the coronavirus? Can you help us out with that?
Sure, most certainly. What is the coronavirus? The novel coronavirus is a new strain of coronavirus that has not previously been identified in humans. Coronaviruses are a large family of viruses that are transmitted between animals and people that causes an illness ranging from the common cold to a more severe disease such as Middle Eastern Respiratory Syndrome, which you've probably heard of as MERS, or Severe Acute Respiratory Syndrome, which is commonly known as SARS. Reports suggest that the 2019 COVID infection that can cause mild to severe diseases and even be fatal in some has been particularly effective with those that have underlying chronic conditions and even causing death. So coronaviruses have been around for a very long time. It's just that the one that we call COVID-19 is the new strain that has come out recently.
These strains have been out. We have these various different strains that are out right now. And of course, we know about the flu that's out as well. And a lot of these have, you know, have caused havoc throughout the globe, right?
Correct.
So kind of trying to figure out, what is it about this coronavirus? What's different about this virus than some of the others, especially the flu? You know, we've had the flu that's been out, and it's, unfortunately, it's attacked and it's killed people worldwide. What's different about this virus, the coronavirus?
Absolutely. And this is not in any way to downplay the flu. That disease is still an annual blight that we could be even be more proactive in fighting, like annual flu shots are important. And it's still true that tens of thousands of people die from the flu each year in the U.S. But also keep in mind that in a given year, COVID-19 hasn't been around a year or even a half a year. Wow. Before January, this virus was not even known to science at all. I mean, in fact, it's just getting started. And while there's still a lot of uncertainty over this virus and how it's going to play out for what we know so far, is that the exact death rate is still not clear yet. The evidence so far shows disease kills a larger portion of people than the flu. And it's particularly lethal for people over the age of 60. Mm-hmm. It also has the potential to overwhelm our healthcare systems, which the flu does not. Biologically, it behaves different than the flu in that it takes 1 to 14 days for people with a COVID infection to develop symptoms, 5 days being the medium. For the flu, it's usually around 2 days. That potentially gives people with COVID more time to spread the illness asymptomatically before they even know they have it. Statistics say that for the coronavirus, you tend to infect 2 to 2.5 people. With flu, you tend to infect one. Hmm. Initially, the data for the coronavirus is deadlier. In the U.S., a seasonal flu kills 1 in 1,000 people. For the coronavirus, we're killing 10 to 1,000 people.
Wow.
So that's a significant difference. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I had to ask that question because I had a person, actually one of our staff members, who, you know, was really confused and wondered, you know, why we've taken such a hard line reaction to the coronavirus than we did to the flu. And so I'm glad you, you know, kind of cleared that up for us. That's great. So, and I also have another question for you about testing. We hear a lot about testing. You know, we hear about the antibody testing. We hear about diagnostic testing. So what's the difference between the testing and what's significant about the two?
Great question. And I've been doing a lot of this myself. So the antibody testing is a blood draw. It's generally for people who feel well and they may not have any current symptoms and they've already recovered from coronavirus infection. And so the blood draw is a way for them to find out if they've been infected previously. So they may or may not currently have the COVID virus. The molecular diagnostic test, the swab test, is for new people, people who are having symptoms or the symptoms are worsening, fever, cough, shortness of breath, sore throat, gastrointestinal illnesses. So you're currently sick with the swab test, with the blood draw, you've already been sick. So that's the difference between the antibody test and the molecular test. Okay. And also the antibody test kind of helps you figure out, you know, how severely you were infected by the coronavirus.
Okay. And so, and I know I've heard, you know, people have been talking about, you know, people who've been infected and have recovered from it, they may still have the antibodies, you know, in their system. And so maybe they could help to cure some others. You know, that's the next conversation, I guess, people have been having. So let's move on. Let's talk a little bit about how it has affected our region, how it's affected our community. So Volunteers of America Chesapeake, we cover, you know, our Maryland, D.C., Virginia, and the Carolinas. How has it affected those communities within our organization?
And that's another great question. And to have gone back to the very beginning of coronavirus in our region and to see how it has grown now just really kind of blows my mind away. I go back 8 weeks and I'm like, we had 10 cases. Here we are 8 weeks later. And in the state of Maryland, we have 19,487 cases. Out of that 19,487 cases, 1,200 people have recovered. But we also have had 858 deaths, which is a lot in a short amount of time. Again, you look at the D.C. area where they had zero cases 8 weeks ago, now have 3,892 cases. Out of that, 659 have recovered and you have 185 deaths. Still, that's a lot for a two-month period of time. It's just, it amazes me. And then you look at Virginia with 14,339 confirmed cases. Out of that, 800 recovered and 492 deaths. And so you can kind of see how this is much greater and much more contagious than the flu.
Right.
North Carolina, 9,568 positive cases with only 250 people recovering and 342 deaths. So each region has been attacked greatly by this coronavirus. And if you're noticing, the recovery rate is slower as compared to the flu. Usually, you know, people get the flu, they're back on their feet in a week or so. But with this coronavirus, it's taking a much, much longer time to recover.
Wow. Yeah, this is definitely more serious. And I'm glad we kind of addressed this because I honestly think people weren't seeing the difference. They didn't, you know, always know, well, we have the flu, people die from it, you know, every day, you know, how is this different? Why are we taking this one so seriously? And I'm glad we're talking about it. I'm glad we're, you know, discussing how much more severe and how dangerous this virus is. I also wanted to ask a question about recovery. You know, so we have individuals, you talked about individuals who recovered in each of the regions. Can they be infected again?
Well, here's what studies suggest. It takes around 10 days to start making antibodies that can target the coronavirus. And the sickest patients develop the strongest immune response. If adaptive immune response is powerful enough, then it could leave a lasting memory in the body of the infection that will give the body protection in the future. However, for those who've had the coronavirus and they've only had mild symptoms or none at all, it's not known whether they will develop a sufficient adaptive immune response, therefore leaving them vulnerable to have the coronavirus a second or an even third time.
Wow. So, and we have so many people right now that are walking around and don't even know it, you know, don't know that they have it. So, you know, that would be a large group of people in that category that you were talking about.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. So let's end it with, you know, what's the best way? What's the best way for us to protect ourselves? What are some of the things that everyday people can do to ensure that they protect themselves from COVID-19?
Well, the first thing people can do, which is what most of us are doing, and we really don't like to do it, is stay home. Avoid crowds.
Right.
Try not to be out there where coronavirus is and where you're around people who are asymptomatic and don't know that they have it. I'm sure we all have been told to clean our hands often, use soap and water, alcohol-based hand rub, maintaining a safe distance from people, especially those who are coughing and sneezing. And if you are out there, don't touch your eyes, your nose, and your mouth, and wear a mask. Be sure to take a multivitamin. You want to boost your immune system this time by adding vitamin C. If you're a smoker, now's a great time to quit, because you want to give your body everything you need to fight with. You know, you want to eat a diet high in fruits and vegetables, exercise regularly. And here's one I'm working on personally, maintaining a healthy weight.
Yes.
This is not the time to be obese or be anorexic, right? Because you're not healthy when you're that way. You know, if you drink alcohol, do it in moderation, not too much alcohol, because it causes your immune system to be compromised, and get adequate sleep. And most importantly, if you don't feel well, stay home. Don't contaminate the rest of us. We're trying not to get the coronavirus.
Absolutely. Those are great. And I have a few that I wrote down for myself. Multivitamin, definitely. That's one that I've added, and I'm going to make sure that I continue to do it. The other is the working out. Because, you know, when you're not home, you're not as active as you've been in the past, you know, those pounds tend to pile on. So I've been trying to do that every day. And then the sleep is the other area that I have to work on, because I don't sleep as well as I should. So thank you. I appreciate, you know, all of the information that you shared with us today.
Thank you very, very much. And keep us in prayer. I am a member of the District of Columbia Medical Reserve Corps, and we are actually the ones out here on the front line doing the swabbing 5 days a week. I give 2 days a week to that. And just for an example, yesterday we had 80 cars in 1 hour.
Oh, wow.
People getting tested.
Where do you test? Where's this test region?
It's on South Dakota Avenue, UMC. And we are so incredibly busy, and people are just, there's some really sick people out there. So keep us in prayer.
Absolutely.
We're out here as nurses to serve the community, and we just want everybody to get better. Thanks.
Awesome. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Great. I want to bring in now George Lino. And George is our Vice President of Human Resources and Administration. And I wanted to invite George here so he can kind of share some information about how this COVID-19 situation is, how we're responding to this COVID-19 situation, what Volunteers of America Chesapeake and Carolinas is doing to not only protect our community, but to protect our staff as well as our clients. So George, welcome. Thanks for coming and joining us.
Thank you, Crystal. Thank you. Thank you for having me. I do appreciate it.
Great. So let's kick it off. Let's jump right in. So what is it that what changes have happened with Volunteers of America Chesapeake because of the COVID-19 situation?
Well, the first thing is we had to take a look at how we were going to address this issue in three buckets, right? So one of them is making sure that our staff is protected and providing them with enough information to keep them in the know as to what's happening. The second aspect is regarding the person served and program services. How are we making sure that we're protecting the person served in each of the programs? what is it that we need to do as far as that's concerned and those policies. And then the third one is the financial feasibility, right? Because we wanted to make sure that during this pandemic, that we could still keep our employees working and receiving a paycheck in light of all of the different challenges that we had going. So those are the three buckets that we kind of approach this kind of look from, or this kind of work from regarding the pandemic. And we took it in those directions. Do you want me to elaborate on each of the buckets, or how would you?
Sure, you can go ahead. And, yeah, if you talk to us a little bit about, so I know we had to change some hours changing, yes. Staff is may not be working from, you know, in the offices now. So explain a little bit, go a little bit on, you know, what's going on with the staff.
I think regarding, let's talk about the safety perspective as far as staff is concerned. So there were ways that we approached it. One, we wanted to make sure that we had consistent communication regularly. Thanks to Yvette, who we just spoke to a little while ago, she was very instrumental, and the DC program leadership was very instrumental in establishing what we call our weekly calls, our weekly Zoom calls for all staff. And it was part of the way of making sure that staff knew exactly what's happening, what were the expectations, communicating and answering questions. And we had that now for 8 weeks, every Tuesday at 12 o'clock to 12:30, giving all the staff an update. From there, we also had all of the regional VPs meeting together every day at around 4 to 4:30, what we call a daily COVID call, to really talk about some of the issues with staff, what's going on, how do we address the issue, making sure that the policy that we created was very responsive to employees. So in the policy that we created, we talked about how do we designate staff as essential staff, how some people were able to work from home versus working in the office, looking at offering what we call emergency response time for people who may, for whatever reason, have been coming down with similar symptoms, but they did not test positive for the COVID. How would we respond to persons served in the programs if they did test positive? What's the staff expected to do? And making sure that we were really from the operations lens of Katora Parker pushing out with Lionel Gloucester, making sure that we had enough PPEs to support all of our staff. So, you know, we have about close to 800 employees and, you know, and we have several different 24-hour residential programs in all of our regions. And so having enough PPE, you know, N95 masks, face covers, gowns were needed, and protocols were really important to help instruct staff on what's expected. The one thing I want to mention is that when this COVID even started back in January, we started having conversations when the first incident happened in China, right, before it hit US. So as of January, we were preparing for what could come in hopes that maybe it didn't come, but we were already having the discussion with all the VPs and you know, I have to be very clear that the VPs, Tiana Joyner from North Carolina, Jana Burhau from DC, Gwen McQueenie from Virginia, Cheryl Neverson from Maryland, and Candace Vandewater, our chief operating officer, as well as Russ, our chief executive officer, were all on board with making sure that emergency preparedness was in line to the expectations of the programs and the expectations of staff. So there was it wasn't an either or, it was a staff and person served. How do we protect the whole organization? Great. Jim Sense, who was our VP of Asset Management and was very critical in some of the discussions regarding the emergency response protocols and what we needed to do, as well as connecting with National on their overall arching approach as to what's happening in all of the 33 other affiliates, to collect information and to find best practices so that we're aligned with everyone and all of the different coalitions, whether it be the Northern Virginia Coalition or the DC Coalition and IDD or some of the other groups, just connecting ourselves with those other groups and seeing what else was happening that we needed to bring in to protect our staff moving forward. That was all around the staff protection, staff and person served, and just making sure that we were clear with our approach and our policies and how we addressed issues and putting our staff first to making sure that they understood what was expected because they were in the front lines, right? And they were actually there with the consumer. So they needed to have as much resources at their fingertips as possible.
This is awesome. This is awesome. So it sounds like our organization was on top of things from January with at the start of the virus. And that's awesome. Unfortunately, you know, you don't see that in every aspect of this, of the coronavirus situation, but that's awesome. George, so tell me, how have the staff responded to these changes? A lot of changes have been made. You know, how are they responding to this?
So as you know, Crystal, like I think sometime last year when I first came on board, one of my very first initiatives was to move us to a paperless environment. And we had so many systems that were paper driven, payroll changes, and I want to take time off, and everything was payroll, everything was paper driven. And because we moved in July 1 of 2019 to Paycom as our human capital management system, we were able to flex very quickly to a remote work environment. We did not need to have paper in order to take time off or to respond to surveys or to provide feedback or in managers to make changes with the employees. We were quick to leverage our technology. So, you know, the staff responded very fast to, here's my VPN connection. Here are tech talks around how do you access your OneDrive on your system? How do you move towards a telehealth model to provide services? How do you, you know, shift to leveraging your laptops for communicating with folks and making sure that you have enough time to take off if you needed to take time off? You know, everything moved to a technology perspective. And to your point, our employees responded very favorably. You know, when we talk about what employees were concerned about, we try to address their concerns with, how does this impact me as an employee who's in the home? Right. And because we had people like Yvette Wood doing the Tuesday calls on Zoom, and DC had their biweekly all staff calls, and so did Maryland, Virginia, and North Carolina, all employees were jumping on to understand what was happening. And what was interesting is that we even had a higher turnout in our ministry sessions that we've had. And, you know, in the last 8 weeks, we've had two ministry, you know, our chaplain services. We had a rollout of about 56, 70 people on the call. We had a prayer call. You know, we had a lot of response from folks in this virtual platform, being much easier for them to participate versus them trying to travel to those different locations. Awesome. And so I think that the response from staff was really positive. There were things that were still coming up and we were funneling those questions, but wherever there was a question from a staff person, there was an answer that was either through our CEO's weekly Friday update emails or whatever was on the intranet. They knew that there was information readily available for them that can answer any questions that they had. And I think that's what kept our turnover low, our call-outs low, and staff still keep coming to work and doing the great service that they're doing to the person served.
So it sounds more about keeping staff informed, communicating, yes, making sure that we're communicating in every aspect with them. And that's correct, what's kept them calm during this period and able to kind of make that transition. That's awesome. So here's one thing though, you know, because we're all separate now. We're all kind of isolated, you know, not together like we're used to be. What are we doing to kind of keep that connectiveness, you know, kind of keep staff connected so that they know that we're still that one body, we're still that family? What are we doing?
So we've moved our one body to a very virtual one body session. Mm-hmm. You know, traditionally we've had about maybe 22 or 23 folks participating. Mm-hmm. At the last one body session, we had about 56, almost 60 people participating in the one body session. And these were managers and leaders and supervisors. The once a month ministry service that we have moved to an online virtual service and everyone was engaged in that. We've had various emails around work-life balance, working from home, you know, taking breaks, calling people, connecting to people. As the uptake in work happened pretty quickly, like, you know, you're sitting at your desk for 8 hours a day on your laptop behind meeting, we were encouraging folks to get up and walk outside, you know, wear your face mask, be safe about it, but you don't have to be glued to your laptop every single minute of the day. And those kind of messages were encouraging and they were going out. We also have a blog that, I don't know if everyone knows this, we have a blog, a message board that's on our intranet for staff to actually ask questions around things and, you know, or anybody for that matter can respond. And lastly, it's a lot of little things like this. It's the VOA chat. It's the everyone coming together for a group discussion or admin meetings to celebrate birthdays. Like, I think as much as social distancing causes us to physically be separated from each other, I think the technology has allowed us to even become closer with each other. Oh. Because you're there. Like, this is the moment that you're in. And you don't have no other distractions. Nobody else is knocking on your door. Nobody else is tapping for 5 minutes while you're on a call. You ain't trying to go home in a car. Like, you're right there. So you can be fully engaged in the moment without having any distractions around you. Now, don't get me wrong, if you're working from home and you got kids.
Right. I was just thinking that.
that takes care of that. Or, you know, we got what we call adult kids and they need your attention. But for the most part, I feel much closer to people. I was always close to folks, but I feel closer because when we are talking, I'm spending time with you.
Awesome.
And I have nothing else causing my attention but just you.
Okay, because, you know, Georgia, we've had those conversations where you've been distracted before. So I have your attention now, so I love it. Look.
I'm not suffering from ADD.
Okay, so tell me, what are, and these changes are awesome, and they're taking place, and we've adapted to them. So what do you think we're going to take with us in the future? So what of these things, these technology changes, these tools that we've implemented, what are we going to use in the future? What are we going to continue to do?
Well, right now, we're in the discussions as to what does it look like to return back to the office, mm-hmm. right? We're having those discussions now, mm-hmm. and I can't really tell you for sure what it will look like when we finish the plan, but I will tell you that a lot of it from an administrative lens depends upon, do we really need to physically be in office spaces to do our functions? Mm-hmm. You know, if you recall, I was new, so I didn't experience this. But back when the Lanham Administrative Office had gone through a renovation, everybody was pretty much working from home remotely. Right. So this was not the first time that the organization has experienced this kind of shift. But what's interesting is that this is the second time that to such a magnitude of a shift will cause us to rethink about what is a new workplace? What does that look like? And how do we adapt that to provide a work-life balance that is, one, creative productivity, but at the same time, giving people the space and energy in order to do what they need to do? There are benefits, there are policies that we've created that will probably remain in place because of that. There are approaches to things that we're doing. I mean, there's a number of different things that's going to come out from this. I'm just not at liberty to say all of it, but some of it will. And, you know, people's uptake in technology has gone from zero to 100.
Absolutely.
You know, one minute we were using Skype, now everybody's using Zoom. And everybody has a Zoom account. One minute we were doing Zoom, now everybody got Teams. Everybody has Skype. Everybody has Smartsheet. You know,
it's... There are so many applications out there and just, you know, everybody's learning them now. Yeah, my mom is, you know, trying to get me to teach her how to get onto Zoom. And I'm like, oh my goodness. But yeah, it really is. It's a change.
Mm-hmm. You know, happy hour on a Zoom call is not that bad anymore, okay? or friends and families connecting via Zoom, that's fine.
That's right.
And as much as we laugh about them, I also think, too, that I am sorryful for the staff who may have lost family members in those in this strategy and could not be able to, you know, connect with their family members during their loved one's loss. And there's some really key people. I'm not putting out their names, but I have a prayer for them every single day with the amount of people who have passed away because of the COVID-19. So on one hand, you know, it's bringing people together socially. On the other hand, the devastation behind it is emotional. So we are pushing employee assistance programs, mental health programs, behavioral health programs to allow people an opportunity for they can vent and just seek counseling because it is traumatizing in its own way.
Awesome. And that's a great transition, George, for me to bring Simone in. So I thank you. I appreciate you, your time and my one-on-one with George Leno today. And thanks for joining us on Vision and Voices.
You're more than welcome. Take care, everyone. Bye.
Hi, Simone. We also have with us Simone Blanchard. Simone is the Director of Integrated Behavioral Health with Volunteers of America Chesapeake, and she oversees a few of our different programs and our services. George talked about, you know, mental health at this during this time. So I'd like to ask Simone if she can share some of the services that we offer our clients on a regular basis and then also now during this COVID, you know, 19 situation.
So I currently oversee several mental health programs ranging from Howard County all the way up to Montgomery County. And so we offer targeted case management services. We offer PRP services, which are psychiatric rehabilitation services. We also have permanent supportive housing services. And our newest addition is the outpatient mental health clinic, which kind of completes a wraparound services for our clients. And so that will allow clients to have psychiatry services if needed, as well as therapy, group substance use treatment services, and employment services, so that we can support them at every stage of their life and development.
Awesome. And so with these services that we have, how has this COVID-19 situation kind of affected how we do business, how we take care of our clients?
Well, we all had to move to a telehealth platform, mm-hmm. which has been challenging for some, because we have clients that are very literate with technology and some that struggle. And so all of our services now have been moved to the telehealth platform in a way to connect with our clients and to service them. However, there are days out of the week when staff are on site so that they can get food donations to clients if they need and address any other issues or concerns that are coming up. And so I think that physical contact has been key to kind of helping our clients to stay anchored and to feel supported. And so with our telehealth services, clients are, you know, being connected with us at least 3 times a week so that they do feel supported during this pandemic.
And how are our staff? I know because they're essential, so they have to be there. You know, you said at least a couple times a week they're going out to visit the clients. How are they protecting themselves? What things do we have in place to make sure that they're, you know, they're safe?
So we are practicing social distancing. Mm-hmm. We are using PPE supplies. We have had supplies to go out for the staff as well as the residents, especially since the mandate to have protective gear on when you are in the community. And so that helps to protect the client as well as the staff. We are being adamant about hand washing, mm-hmm. disinfecting the locations, and making sure that you're safe, taking precaution. If there is a resident that is experiencing any level of symptoms, you know, I'm asking them to just, you know, drop the food at their door so that the resident can still benefit from our donations and that they are still being safe. If residents are complaining about symptoms, you know, we are encouraging them strongly and urging them strongly to connect with their primary care provider and or going to the ER to get service. And so we're taking every precaution that we possibly can to ensure that everyone is feeling safe and supported during this time.
Awesome. So I know it's a challenge, you know, and our clients right now, I know you mentioned our staff having to go out to provide food and things like that for our clients and kind of take them around and, you know, kind of doing the transportation for them. So what are some of the client needs right now? What are some of the things that they're experiencing? You know, what are some of their issues at this point?
The biggest issue is the food insecurity. And so making sure that we are able to have food for them, making sure that we're able to have food for the clients. Also, looking at different avenues to make the clients more independent. And so one of the things that we've been looking at is how to get home delivery to some of the clients.
Gotcha.
So they can have their food delivered to them, as well as their pharmaceutical needs, making sure that they have accessibility to technology. So each location was supported with a tablet so that they can connect with their psychiatry services as awesome. Well as their medical services if their doctor has moved to the telehealth platform as well. And then keeping them informed, you know, because it's so much information that's coming at all of us so fast. And so, you know, we have these virtual groups weekly to keep them informed with what we are doing, what is new, what is expected of them. And in some cases, and so some locations, we've even had to implement very strict visitation guidelines where visitors have been suspended for the sake of the safety for everyone. Right. And so we're really taking every step possible to ensure the safety of that. And I feel very pleased to say this, and I'm going to knock on something when I say this, but I oversee over 500 clients,
right,
and I have over 20 staff that are under me, and not one has had a positive COVID test. And so I feel
that attests to their, you know, regimen of keeping safe, protecting themselves, doing the following the guidelines.
Yeah, I feel very, very blessed. And because every other program that is in the Maryland side has had some interaction with the COVID-19, whether it be client and or staff. Mm-hmm.
That is so awesome. That's a great testament, you know, to what we're doing and what we're continuing to do in our programs. Yeah. So we have all of these different, you know, we have clients who do have these specific needs and things. So how can we help them? How can somebody who's listening to us today, what can they do to help out our organization or help the clients that you talked about?
So they need food, you know, they need toilet tissue. Everybody needs toilet tissue.
The basics.
You know, we get requests, you know, do you have toilet tissue? Can you pick up toilet tissue? They need games because we do have children that are at some of our sites. So any kind of games or art supplies or activities that can be donated to kind of keep the children engaged would be phenomenal for us at this point. Yeah, those are like primary. And then we were having some issues, you know, surrounding the technology and the use of their cell phones, but many providers have upped the client's minutes so that they can connect with us for telehealth or their medical services. And so that kind of took a barrier away that initially we were kind of dealing with. And that is now subsiding as we're, you know, knee deep in the pandemic.
Yeah, I saw something where Verizon was offering a program where they had internet services. They reduced it to, well, the first 90 days were free. And then they had $9.95 a month that they were offering, you know, as a rate. And I thought that was awesome. It came through, I think it was Prince George's County school system was sending that out to parents for them to know. So that was a great tool, something that, you know, everybody can look into and be a part of that. Cause you know, where else can you go to find internet services for $9.95 a month? That's awesome. So,
absolutely.
Yeah. And
the humanity that has come out of this pandemic just speaks volumes about who we are as humans and how quickly it can help us to remember what is most important and how we can stand together to support each other. You know, it has just been phenomenal. Mm-hmm. Even the employees stepping up like, no, I can't, you know, leave the clients. Right. You know, I got to get there. I got to do this. So it's just, it has just been overwhelming to see how we stand up. And I have to give a shout out to you, Crystal, because I have a lot of programs and I feel like every other day I'm like, Crystal, like, okay, this person is, and you've gone above and beyond to connect our programs and to ensure that those food donations are coming in and that, you know, our clients are getting what they need. So thank you so much, because I deeply appreciate you and all that you have done. You've been vital throughout this process. And I just so appreciate you and everything you do for us and our clients.
Thank you. And I appreciate you. You're awesome. So anytime I need something, I know I could always call on you, Simone, and you're there. So it goes, you know, both ways. So thank you so much. I do want to give a note for anyone who's listening. If you're interested in helping out, if you're interested in donating to our organization and helping out those in need, we have what we have is called a Ways to Give page. Just go to voachesapeake.org. That's voachesapeake.org. And you'll click on the Ways to Give button. We have a number of different options that are listed there, from ways to give gift cards to some of the grocery locations to clicking onto Amazon. We have a wish list that's set up, and you can send the items to any of our locations. We have a drop site, you know, designation locations that we have listed so that you can have deliveries sent to those different locations. We have a way to make face masks. We're looking for individuals to make and provide face masks. So all of those things we have available, even school supplies, because we know the kids have to go back to school eventually. They're still going to be in need of those supplies. So we haven't stopped that. So there are a number of different options and opportunities for you to give in addition to monetary. We can always take the money. So again, we want to make sure that we put that out there and say that, you know, yes, you know, our clients are still looking for support. We're trying to do our best, and we appreciate our employees, our staff, Yvette Wood, who is our medical professional today, who joined us, George Lino, our VP of Human Resources and Administration, Simone Blanchard, our Director of Integrated Behavioral Health. So we appreciate you all. Thank you for the work that you're doing in our organization. And you are the ones that are making a difference. You know, you're the testament to what Simone was talking about, how we don't have those individuals within our organization that are sick. That's a blessing in itself. So I just thank you. I'm going to end this by saying thank you to our listeners who have joined us today. You know, thank you for joining us on our podcast, Vision and Voices, a podcast where ordinary people are doing extraordinary things in your community. You can listen to this podcast and others like it on Dragon Digital Radio at podbean.com. And don't forget to share it, comment, or rate our podcast. Thank you.
Connect with us. We are Dragon Digital Radio.